It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Tomorrow, voters go to the polls to choose among four Democrats hoping to become Pennsylvania's next governor. We've had the opportunity to interview the candidates during their stops in Pittsburgh. We're going to hear those interviews in the order in which we conducted them, beginning with Tom Wolf, with whom we spoke in early January. Mr. Wolf served as former Governor Ed Rendell's Secretary of Revenue, but he has never held elected office. We began by discussing Wolf's business background as chairman and CEO of the Wolf Organization, reportedly the largest supplier of kitchen and bath cabinetry in the U.S., and how that might translate to being a successful governor.
Yes, I haven't held elective office before, but I've been in public service for a long time. I started my life as a young person, 19 years old, joining the Peace Corps. I have been very active in my community when I came back to Pennsylvania after earning a PhD at MIT. And as I was building my business, I was also very engaged in helping to build the community I lived in, South Central Pennsylvania, York County. And I think while I was doing that, I was also very interested in the political system. My wife and I contributed to good political candidates for many, many years. So my running right now is really an extension of all those things. I care about the community. I care about my state. I'm a native Pennsylvanian. And I think we can do so much better in politics. In a democracy, this is where you go if you want to make things better.
You did begin a run for governor back in 2008, but you dropped out. What happened?
That's when I was Secretary of Revenue, and I resigned in order to actually start a run for governor. And I was going to wait till after the inauguration in 2008, the presidential inauguration. And I learned that the business my two business partners and I had sold in 2006 was struggling. And so I worked to put together a deal to buy the company back at 100 cents on the dollar, did not play games with any discounted rates, because I felt that as much as I wanted to run for governor and as important as I thought that was, I thought it was more important to go back and help save the jobs of the people I had worked with for so many years who had helped me build a successful business. And so I did. I dropped out of the race. I had a campaign team in place. I had made a lot of commitments, but I dropped out because I thought saving that business and saving those jobs was more important than running for governor.
It sounded like you had a few harrowing hours there during January of 2008, just trying to – working the phones and trying to hold everything together.
Actually, it was January of 2009.
Oh, right. The inauguration would be in 2009.
Right.
Exactly.
So it was 2009 and actually started working middle of February 2009. And continued to work through the harrowing phone conversations until everything fell into place. But again, just in terms of harrowing times, the first challenge was to solve the debt issue. We had too much debt. I don't want to get into too much detail in terms of the business. But I solved that problem but realized that we also had a business model problem. We served the residential construction industry, and that part of the economy was obviously struggling in 2009. And so the business model we had as a distributor of other people's building products really wasn't working. So in addition to doing all the work to take care of the debt issue, I then had to struggle with changing the business model. And that was even harder. And so went through a very difficult period in 2010, 2011, when we really changed the company around, turned it 180 degrees from what it had been doing, and turned it into one of the fastest growing, once again, building products companies in the United States. We now design and manufacture kitchen cabinets, decking, railing, things that can be used in residential construction and are doing quite well. We're in 28 states now. All of our stuff is made in the United States, and I'm very proud of our success. So I went through actually two periods of difficulty.
And I bring that up because a part of being an office holder today is dealing with debt. And have the lessons learned from the experiences that you just described, how have they shaped how you would govern if elected?
Well, I was very interested in Mayor Peduto's inaugural ceremony yesterday. I think he summed it up in saying that we Democrats should support what we support not only because these things are right, we have the right values, but because they actually work. And what's worked in business for me, I think, is what's going to work in politics. It's going to work for Mayor Peduto, and it's going to work for the next governor of Pennsylvania, and that is you bring people together. You don't separate them. You make sure people share in the benefits of their hard work. At my company, we share 20 to 30 percent, 20% to 30% of our net profit each year in a cash distribution to our employees. And that's on top of good wages and good benefits. Do that not just because it's right, but because it works. Our truck drivers actually care about the customers they're delivering product to. Our warehouse workers care about the products they're packing into the trucks. They're their products. And I think that same kind of shared bringing people together, of fairness, of listening, of actually sitting down with a vision, those things work in the private sector. But those are the things that will also work in the public sector. And those are the things that I think we as Democrats have to promote.
Talking with Democratic candidate for Governor Tom Wolf here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. He is Governor Ed Rendell's former Secretary of Revenue and is a businessman who is running for governor and who has never held elected office. Might that be in this political climate with people seeing a certain level of dysfunction in government at both the state and national level, might that be a plus for you?
I think it is a plus. I think people are looking for something a little bit different. Now, they're not looking for such unconventional differences that someone's coming in and just going to be different. I think they're looking for someone who might come in with a perspective of actually wanting to get something done and with a record of actually having gotten something done so that I can point to various parts of my life where I actually have gotten things done, working with the very same kind of people that you find in any setting, including in the public sector. So when I was in the Peace Corps, I got villagers in India to adopt high-yielding rice. When I was in academia, I was able to convince people that I had good ideas. My dissertation actually won a national dissertation award. When I was in business, I was successful. When I was in community activities, chair of the United Way of York College, of Pennsylvania Board of Trustees, the Chamber of Commerce, I could get people to do things. I think that's what people are looking for. They don't care what you've done in public service or whether your background looks conventional. They're looking for someone who's gotten things done, has done them in the right way. And I think that's what I bring to this race.
Okay, let's talk money. It has been well documented that you are spending $10 million of your own money on this effort. And that looks to be more than twice as much as your opponents are reportedly spending. Are you concerned that there may be a perception that you're trying to buy an election?
I'm sure there is that perception. I think history has shown you cannot by elections. I think I have a good story to tell. I think I have a background that's relevant for the needs of Pennsylvania, especially right now at this point in time. And since I'm not a career politician, the only way I can get my story out is to go on air and tell the story, and that takes money. But my wife and I determined early on in the campaign.
And let me clarify something. When you say go on air, you're referring to paid political advertisements, which, of course, this is not. And no money has changed hands here with regard to your appearance on WESA.
Thank you for that clarification. That's absolutely true. But I think I do have a story to tell, and I need to get that out. But the other thing is I am not the only person contributing to my race. If I were, I would be very concerned about that. But not only am I putting my own and my wife's money into this campaign, but I've raised a good deal of money, and I'm very proud of that, so that there are other people out there who believe in my campaign who are willing to step forward and make a contribution. And I think in combination, that will help me prevail. But it also shows that there are other people aside from my wife and me who believe that my story actually is important. It's a good one, could actually be something that people want right now.
Your views on social issues, you support abortion rights, gay rights, and some gun control. So should Pennsylvania allow gay marriage?
Yes.
When you say that you support some gun control, what does that mean exactly, some gun control?
Well, you know, I'm from York County, and in York County, the first day of deer season is a religious holiday. Actually, all the schools are closed. So I grew up in that environment, and I understand the needs and rights of hunters and people who own guns. At the same time, I think I understand the need for rational, reasonable controls, taking care of loopholes, having reasonable background checks, and also having gun safety measures in place. So I believe in I think, reasonable, moderate controls in the context of a strong Second Amendment.
You've said that Pennsylvania is a state that could use some change. What would you change? What would you do differently exactly?
Well, I think the big change in Pennsylvania is that we need to recognize our inherent greatness. We are a great state, and what we've put up with in terms of believing that Pennsylvania is really something that has a wonderful past but not much of a future. I mean, that's what we have actually done, I think, in the policies that especially this governor has promoted, we are better than that. And I would do what governments, democratic with a small d, governments do around the world when they want to create economic opportunity. And we should have that here, but they invest in education. We shouldn't be walking away from our teachers. We should be working and walking toward them and working with them. We need to have a good education system and a system where I and York County care about the outcome of the educational process in Pittsburgh as much as you should care about my daughters who graduated from the public schools in York County. You should care about the education my daughters receive. We need to invest in education to get the future we need. We need to invest in transportation. We need to knit this state together in a way that has never been knitted together before. And transportation is a key to that.
But all those things take money. So what would you do to raise revenue? The governor's been looking at things like lottery privatization, which looks as though it's going to be rejected. So where do you come up with the money to do these things, especially when as a businessman you have to be careful about running into the red?
Right. Well, keep in mind I was revenue secretary, so taxation is something I actually know something about.
I'm sure you do.
But I was also in business, and I know that you don't raise revenues by raising prices. In fact, you raise revenues by getting more people to buy your products at the same price. And I think the same thing is true of taxation. If we broaden the base and make the tax system fair, we can raise the revenues we need to do the things we need to do, the limited things we need to do as a state to set the table for great economic development.
How would you manage the issue of fracking? I mean, it's a touchy issue, and the state has, in the view of some, wanted to take control over fracking issues away from individual communities and create state oversight. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, two things. The state Supreme Court has ruled that the state government cannot do that.
But the state is appealing.
The state's appealing, but I think the Supreme Court has made an interesting ruling that will probably stand. But regardless, the other thing is the state has not done an adequate job, in my opinion, of actually regulating the exploitation of this natural gas so that we do have environmental degradation that we just simply shouldn't have. I agree with the critics of fracking who say that we cannot do fracking perfectly. I think that's true. But we can do it a lot better than we're doing it right now, and I think part of what we should do is use some of the funds that a reasonable, competitive severance tax would produce, take some of those funds and use it to regulate this fracking so that it's done as well as it could possibly be done.
Tom Wolf is a Democratic candidate for governor. Mr. Wolf, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me, Paul. I appreciate it.
Coming up, our conversations with Democratic gubernatorial candidates Katie McGinty, Rob McCord, and Allison Schwartz when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're bringing you interviews we've conducted with the four candidates vying for the gubernatorial nomination in tomorrow's Democratic primary. Next up, Katie McGinty, who stopped by our studio in late January. Ms. McGinty worked as an environmental advisor to Vice President Al Gore and became a key environmental advisor to President Clinton. Later, she served as Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection in the cabinet of Governor Ed Rendell. I began by asking Ms. McGinty how she would address the problem of high unemployment in the Commonwealth.
I think this is really on the cutting edge in terms of what is now our problem in Pennsylvania, but also our huge opportunity. It wasn't long ago that we were seventh in the country in job creation. Today, under Governor Corbett's leadership, we have fallen at one point to 49th in the country. Now, how can that be when we're sitting in an economy like we see here in Pittsburgh with innovation, cutting-edge research? What we need to do is invest in those entrepreneurs and businesses that can grow new jobs and opportunities. On the issue of inequality that the president's going to highlight, I think there's rich and fertile common ground. What if we took an approach that was growth-based? And I'm proud to be pushing an agenda today that's about, for example, tax cuts for hardworking, low-income families and increasing the minimum wage so that families have purchasing power again. If we restore wages, then the consumer can be an engine of growth, invest in entrepreneurs, give people purchasing power, and Pennsylvania can be number one again.
We have a Twitter comment from Jordan who wants to know, speaking of minimum wage, what your position is. You're saying you want to see the minimum wage raised. If you had the power to do that or to work with a legislature that was on board with you, what do you think that the minimum wage should be raised to?
Well, you know, maybe a more accurate word even would be to restore the minimum wage in real terms. We are way below where we would have been even in 1968. If we added the cost of inflation to what the minimum wage was then, we'd be talking $10 an hour. Now, I've put a proposal out to start now at $9 an hour and then automatically to increase with the rate of inflation. And I think that's important to get it out of politics and just keep wages real. Here's another thing that I think is important. Some people will be moved to say, yes, we need to pay a decent salary to people because it's right. It's the right thing to do. And it's wrong for hardworking people to be living in poverty. If that's not your bag, just think about it economically. Economists are telling us hands down that this recovery has been lackluster, specifically because wages are not keeping pace. So if you just want to look at it in dollars and cents terms, our economic growth depends on our paying people a decent, livable wage.
Let's move on to the environment. Just over a week ago on the eastern side of the state, when seven cars in a train derailed in Philadelphia on a bridge over the Schuylkill River and Schuylkill Expressway, six of the derailed cars carried crude. One of them, plus a boxcar, were left leaning over the bridge. It was a close call. As a former DEP secretary, what would you do to ensure that the increasing number of trains carrying crude oil through Pittsburgh and across the state aren't a danger to people and the environment?
Yes. Well, there's two things, and one that I would really ask the governor to step up in an urgent basis. We should be rerouting these trains away from densely populated areas. The federal government has now strongly recommended that, and some in the industry have stood up and said that's absolutely a good idea. So it takes some leadership to get that done. Safety first. Second, I think there's an economic opportunity for us. And here's where when you push tough regulations that are smart, you can create new businesses. What's the business? Well, what if Pennsylvania got in the lead of building the new tanker cars that are double or triple lined that are resistant to the kind of explosive situation we've seen in other areas of our country and in Canada? Let's get in front of this. Safety first, but then be smart about it. The locomotive industry had been a big part of Pennsylvania's manufacturing base. A new generation of cleaner, safer trains could put people to work.
Did, in fact, the governor cut $1 billion from the education budget, or was it money that went away after the stimulus money ran out?
The stimulus money did run out, but the stimulus was provided as temporary relief to insure against cuts. What the governor did was to decide against, for example, a proposal that was supported by Republicans and Democrats to impose a reasonable severance tax and to have those dollars to dedicate to important priorities like education. And in fact, one of the first proposals that I put out in this campaign would be to do just that, to impose a reasonable severance tax and dedicate it dollar for dollar to restore the $1 billion that the governor chose to take out of public education.
Where do you believe that Marcellus Shale fits into our future energy picture? And what concerns do you have, Ms. McGinty, about shale drilling's impact on air and water?
So when I had the privilege of serving as Secretary of Environmental Protection, we took energy as one of our top priorities. But, Paul, we went forward in a way that said, listen, we need to diversify our energy resources. And by the time I had left office, it wasn't California, it wasn't Massachusetts, it was Pennsylvania that was number one in the country in renewable energy manufacturing. We were number one in wind, number two in solar. Now, what about gas? Well, gas is another incredibly important resource, and we should use it, too, in a responsible way. And that means we need much greater environmental cop on the beat. We need to have tougher regulations. We need to have zoning in terms of where gas can and can't go, in terms of the development of it. But what I'd like to see is, one, gas to be not the only energy source that we're interested in, but part of a mix that includes efficiency and renewables. And second, that let's not just produce the gas here and then see it go out of state or out of country. Let's use the gas to support value-added high-tech industries in Pennsylvania. Chemicals, pharmaceuticals, life sciences, these are all industries that actually don't necessarily burn gas for energy. What they do is they use it cleanly as a feedstock to build those value-added products. I am concerned that in the last couple of years, we have fallen from 3 and 4 jobs in the Marcellus going to Pennsylvanians to today 1 and 2. That's the wrong direction. We want to capture the value add and make sure we're creating jobs that are paying Pennsylvanians good wages and responsibly benefiting from our natural resources.
How should the Marcellus shale industry be taxed?
Well, I have a specific proposal that I've put forward, and that proposal is essentially built on the same formula that West Virginia uses. To take away any argument that we would destroy our competitiveness if we impose a shale tax, I deliberately shaped my proposal to be less of a tax than what West Virginia imposes. Even if you do that, today it would represent about $700 million of additional revenue for key priorities like education. Over 10 years, even with conservative assumptions, that would grow to about $1.8 billion a year of money that we could use again for infrastructure, for education, for the key priorities that can keep our economy growing.
A couple more issues I wanted to make sure that we covered. Let's talk about gay marriage. Last summer, Attorney General Kathleen Kane opted against defending the state's ban on same-sex marriage because she considers it, in her words, wholly unconstitutional. Her sentiment, of course, echoes those of the U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, who chose not to defend the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. What do you think of how Kathleen Kane handled this?
Well, listen, I hope that Pennsylvania can come to this decision in a way that is driven by respect for Pennsylvanians, which means to honor fairness and equality in basic rights like marriage. I hope we don't have to go kicking and screaming as the governor seems to want us to, with a court ordering us to do the right thing, to be on the right side of the law and the right side of history. I'm with Kathleen Kane for sure on this, and the Supreme Court and all of the other courts in the land who have now been very, very clear on this issue.
So you're saying it's time to legalize gay marriage in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely. Marriage equality, fairness, basic human rights.
Also, the Corbett administration has on several occasions prodded UPMC and Highmark to resolve their dispute on future coverage. Has Governor Corbett, in your opinion, done enough on this? What would you do to resolve it?
Patience is sometimes a virtue, except for when it's not. And on this one, I would not be patient. And I don't feel that the governor has been nearly hands-on enough. These are incredibly important institutions. This fight has meant that people have gotten hurt. People are scared whether they'll be able to access the doctor that they trust. It's unacceptable. As governor, I would have UPMC and Highmark in a room. No one would leave until this was resolved. These institutions need to get back to being the charitable institutions whose mission and mandate is to serve people. And that's not what we have seen.
Last but not least, one of your Democratic competitors in the race for governor, John Hanger, has come out in favor of full legalization of marijuana. Other states have done this. What should Pennsylvania do?
Well, Paul, our family, as I said, I'm 9th of 10 kids, and unfortunately, I sat by the bedside of my brother, lost him to lung cancer, and my sister to brain cancer. So I've seen human pain and suffering, and my heart breaks for families who are seeing that with themselves, their children, etc. If there is a role, a medical necessity for marijuana to address those problems, then I want to be for that and provide that solace to those families and those individuals. But I, beyond that, do not support the full legalization of recreational marijuana. I do support decriminalizing the use of marijuana. And I think it is also a tragedy, the number of young people whose lives are being destroyed through minor, nonviolent offenses. Once they're sent to prison, that on their record, destroying their opportunities for jobs, et cetera. We've got to change that. You know, our prison population is the largest in the world. We see African Americans five times as likely to be locked up because of marijuana. Every bit of that needs to change. And I would support that decriminalizing of marijuana. And I would support providing marijuana where there is a medical necessity.
Our guest has been former state DEP Secretary Katie McGinty, Democratic candidate for governor. Ms. McGinty, thank you so much for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Today, we're bringing you interviews with the Democratic candidates for governor of Pennsylvania on the eve of tomorrow's primary election. In February, we spoke with State Treasurer Rob McCord. Along with the other Democratic gubernatorial hopefuls, McCord is from eastern Pennsylvania. I began our conversation by asking him about the role southwestern Pennsylvania will play in determining the outcome.
First, southwestern Pennsylvania and western Pennsylvania in general up into the northwestern part will decide the race, along with greater Scranton, the northeast. I absolutely agree. I also am very lucky in that I have a nice blend of background. I was a business leader for a couple of decades. I've been at the bottom, middle, and top of a lot of barrels. I was a congressional staffer and then CEO of a think tank. I was a scholarship kid to Harvard before I worked on Capitol Hill. Then I went to the Wharton Business School, Penn's Business School, and got to invest in businesses and be an entrepreneur. I really wasn't part of any political culture there in Montgomery, Chester, Delaware counties. And then when I started running for treasurer, I had a real sense of calling. And to be honest, I planted myself in Allegheny County. I intend to be the governor who loves Pittsburgh back.
You met with Mayor Bill Peduto today. How do you see the support of the new mayor helping you win over the voters in Pittsburgh?
Oh, well, first, to be fair to the mayor, we were actually meeting on government issues, getting more women on boards, ports and authorities. I've been pushing. This is me as treasurer. I noticed some data from Credit Suisse, an entity called Catalyst. And what we've been pushing for is to try to get three or more women on all corporate boards. There's a lot of evidence that that helps. In publicly traded companies, there's a 17% improvement in investment returns for having at least one woman on the board versus no woman on the board.
A Philadelphia Inquirer editorial today expressed concerns about the pay-to-play culture in politics, which it and others feel is entrenched in Pennsylvania politics to the point of giving special interests much more influence over the public policy agenda than mere voters. Does the Inquirer have a point? What are your thoughts?
So in a generalized sense, I think the Inquirer has a point. And there is massive room for improvement when it comes to how we run campaigns. My way of looking at the race, I think it's going to come down to three people. And I'm worried that it'll be an auction either from if you've spent the most time running for office and you have the most name recognition in Philadelphia, that's one career politician's advantage over me. Or if you have the most family wealth and you're willing to put $11 million of family money on the table to buy the nomination. I really don't like either of those scenarios.
And to your point about, you know, being able to look in the mirror and, mm-hmm. and I'm my own best funder, in your opinion, does that maintain a level playing field, or should, as the legislature is considering now, should campaign finance limits be imposed? Is there just too much money involved in the equation here?
The short answer is we need change, and I don't want to get too prescriptive, first of all, because it's a negotiated settlement, and second, as I walk through the process, one of the things that's really painful for me is I realize you sort of can't get into a race without having somebody throw mud at your white shirt. And then you have mud on your shirt. And they go, well, at the very least, you have mud on your shirt. And it's like, yes, but I know I didn't do anything wrong. In fact, I'm here trying to increase economic opportunity for working people, and I took a big pay cut to do it. So there's this kind of appearance issue that is very hard to unwind. Number two.
And it's not unlike the great leaders on either side,
party. Nobody has a monopoly on either virtue or appearance issues or whatever. To say, well, we're going to give the nomination for governor to anybody who can write a $10 million check out of their own household, I think is not right. I don't think it's the right fit for the Democratic Party. But giving limits would make it harder to defeat that self-funder. Plus, a lot of labor leaders point out, look, I aggregate 100,000 union members to write my big check. It's the only way for me to have a lot of weight in a conversation on the financial side of the ledger. And finally, I'm talking to somebody in public broadcasting. You'd have to take a look at whether or not we could get free access to the airwaves, because 90% of your spending for a statewide race ends up being on television ads if you're going to win. And so a piece of the puzzle might not lie with campaign limits. It might lie with advertising buys.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest is Democratic candidate for governor and current state treasurer Rob McCord. Let's turn to the environment. A train derailment in Vandergrift became the second in as many months in Pennsylvania, only this time there were thousands of gallons of oil leaked from the overturned cars. And in the same week, last week, a natural gas well caught fire and exploded in Greene County, killing a worker. What concerns do you have, Rob McCord, about the transporting of hazardous materials in Pennsylvania?
I have acute concerns about transporting of hazardous waste, but I'll make it a broader thing. We too often have had elected officials who are willing to behave, again, like they're owned and operated by a large corporate interest. That starts with limiting liability when it's not necessary and, in fact, harmful. If you make companies fully liable for the full cost of damage done, you drive up their incentive to do the right thing. So you have a lot of responsible companies, frequently larger market caps, publicly traded, who are working continuously because they understand they have a liability in their publicly traded shares. What we really need to worry about is the kind of wildcatter mentality that can happen where somebody engages in a dash for cash and takes a lot of unnecessary risks. So it starts with holding these folks absolutely liable. It continues with investing not just money, but respect in the need for certain kinds of public sector jobs. You know, this idea that the only good jobs are created by business is silly. I care a lot about the quality of the average teacher and school nurse and so forth and support for professional. Similarly, I care when my snow is scraped or not scraped. I care about public safety and emergencies. We need inspectors on the job in all of these environmental realms where things aren't just appropriately taxed and zoned. They're inspected ahead of time so that the accidents are stopped from happening in the first place.
What would your administration do to encourage the construction and renovation of energy-efficient buildings, as well as the creation of smart growth communities and green jobs? How does that fit into the picture for you? Is it the answer to solving some of the environmental concerns that people have?
The short answer is yes, and I really welcome the question because you allow me to focus on some of my actual track record as treasurer. We have a home energy loan program that gets households that often can't find that $15,000 to upgrade their home and make it more energy efficient in a way that pays for itself usually in about 3.5 years. We've invested in a facility in a public-private partnership that gets them that money up front. It pays for itself rapidly. It has a very, very low default rate. We have an escrow account in case there were a default rate. It's true innovation in business in a way that did three things: created jobs, reduced the carbon footprint, and reduced the long-term costs and increased the revenue flowing into working family households. So we're really happy with that. That's the Home Energy Loan Program, and people can check it out at patreasury.gov. And we're about to create something called the Campus Energy Efficiency Fund. So a lot of these large inefficient buildings are owned by colleges that have weak balance sheets, and they can't afford to do the big investments. Even if they pay for themselves years in the future, they can't afford to put the debt on their balance sheet. We, again, invented a financial instrument through a public-private partnership that makes energy improvement of buildings, and I'd love to see more LEED-certified buildings in Pennsylvania.
And you're in one right now.
Right. And a lot of this is about regulation, but some of it's about innovation. And what it does is it says, you just sign up for this as a service. It immediately reduces your expenses. And again, what have we done? We've reduced the cost of a college education, operating costs in ways that we hope help with tuition down the road. We've reduced the carbon footprint. We've increased the supply of jobs.
We're down to just a couple minutes, so I'm going to just give you a lightning round. Starting with solving the education funding crisis, Governor Corbett has been called out for failing to do that. What would your approach to be to solving this problem?
First, you make
it in a nutshell.
First you make it your top priority to invest and fund, not your top priority to cut, which is what he did. Second, when you're talking about increasing the revenues, which he's finally doing and noting that it's an investment, took him 3.5 years to realize it was an investment, not a spend number. Don't build that case on the soft sands of fantasy finances.
Okay, the Corbett administration on several occasions prodded UPMC and Highmark to resolve their dispute on future coverage.
These people have a lot of public trust, both as nonprofits that are paying people more than $1 million a year and as entities that have a certain degree of what economists would call monopoly power. There has to be a must-take kind of provision in this sort of process, and I would be supportive of that.
Is it time to legalize gay marriage in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
What about legalizing marijuana?
I think it's too early to come to a firm conclusion, but the main point I would make is people keep reading the polls instead of thinking things through. They say for medical purposes only and then decriminalization. The fact is, let's look at the evidence that comes out of Colorado and elsewhere, have an evidence-oriented conversation. If we decide to move in that direction, you want legalization, not decriminalization, because then you can regulate it and you can tax it. So you're creating jobs and revenues to invest in public education and job creation.
State Treasurer and candidate for Governor Rob McCord, thanks for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for your time.
Coming up, a conversation with Democratic gubernatorial candidate Allison Schwartz. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Today we're bringing you our interviews with the Democratic candidates seeking the gubernatorial nomination, in the order in which they appeared on our program. In March, Pennsylvania Congresswoman Allison Schwartz joined us in Studio A. She currently serves on the House Ways and Means Committee. Prior to the first of her 5 terms in Congress, she was a member of the Pennsylvania State Senate. The Commonwealth has never had a woman governor, and I began by asking Ms. Schwartz if Pennsylvania was ready to elect one.
Absolutely. Let me say they really are hungry and ready to elect a new governor to defeat Tom Corbett. His failed leadership is something I think really unites a lot of Pennsylvanians, not just Democrats, but moderate Republicans and independents. And what I think they're really looking for is someone with a really proven track record, accomplishments, knowing how to get things done in government. Certainly my years in the state Senate, I worked hard to make things happen. I'm sure we'll talk about some of those. The Children's Health Insurance Program, where I worked with both Governor Casey and State Representative Alan Kukovich to get that done, defied expectations. Continued to do that kind of work in Washington as well, where it's tough to find that common ground and get things done. But I'm someone who believes fervently that's what I'm there for. It's important for me to stand up for Pennsylvania families and Pennsylvania's future and to stand up for the whole state. And I've been doing that, and I do believe that it may well take a woman to shake things up in Harrisburg, to really change the politics of sort of, it's really okay to do nothing, you know, maybe things will take care of itself, but to really address the challenges facing Pennsylvania and understand how government can help in a number of ways to grow the economy and certainly in terms of issues of education and infrastructure and transportation. These are core responsibilities of the state and government and pushing to make those things happen, get things done. That's why I'm running for governor.
Now, you were the 3rd woman elected to the Pennsylvania State Senate. Our legislature doesn't always present itself as one of the most enlightened. Describe what that experience was like for you, particularly when it came to trying to get things done, to get legislation passed.
Well, let me say that Pennsylvania does not have a strong record. We were in the bottom 10 in the number of women in our state legislature and in elected women statewide. So we do have some work. I was, just the 3rd woman in the state Senate. You know, I went to Harrisburg to really fight for my district and to fight for families and children across the state and to get something done. And I remember a colleague of mine saying, you know, I was awfully nice but damn determined. And actually, I was, and I continue to be. I'm really determined to get things done on behalf of families and children. I did.
Does the experience that you've had in Congress, you know, this has been called the do-nothing Congress, and it's been very difficult for Democrats. The Republicans are in control, and they have tried to obstruct a lot of what the Democrats have wanted to do. Has that helped you in your determination to get things done?
Well, I'm happy to talk about some of the things I've gotten done as a member of Congress.
Sure.
You're absolutely right. These last couple of years has been such a force against doing anything and finding that common ground, finding a way to move forward and get something done. It's not been easy to do that. So things are completely stalled in the House because the leadership won't bring it up, even if we could find the votes to do it in a bipartisan way. My experience, my ability to get things done, to find some of the solutions that work for some of the challenges facing our families, that ability, that history, that experience is going to be enormously important as governor. The governor has to lead the way in defining how we meet these challenges and setting those goals and being absolutely clear about them and then having a plan to get them done and then pursuing that plan aggressively. And that's what I've done on my first bill in Congress was a bill to give tax credits to businesses hiring our veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. My own experience as the daughter of a Korean War veteran, his experience when my dad came back from Korea, I was a young child, very young child at the time. I was 5 when he came back for over 2 years of being away from the family. I know that his getting back into meaningful work was important to him. And we got that done. And it's law of the land now. And it was signed by George Bush. And I didn't agree with him on very much, but it was part of a bill that we got done as Democrats and was signed by George Bush.
Well, you are known as one of the leading healthcare experts in government. And you have authored several key provisions of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, including increasing access to primary care, banning pre-existing conditions, and allowing young adults to remain on their parents' health coverage, which are all very popular parts of the Affordable Care Act. So Pennsylvania, as you know, is one of those states that chose not to create its own exchange. What do you think of how this has been handled? How would you handle it?
Yeah. Well, let me first say that what we did with President Obama in getting the Affordable Care Act, just it was a major accomplishment. And we've already seen millions of Americans signing up for health coverage. I was very involved in that and take real pride to get that done. Took a long time to get to there in this country. And here we are in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And very specifically, the governor has delayed, at best delayed, not accepting federal tax dollars. These are Pennsylvania taxpayer dollars been sent to Washington, not having them come back to Pennsylvania and be put to work to cover 500,000 Pennsylvanians who could be insured today if, in fact, the governor took those dollars and then used them to make sure that we have and what I would do would make sure that not only are those people covered, but that we do it in the most cost-efficient way, that make sure that we, again, focus on primary care, more coordinated care, cost-effective care to make sure those Pennsylvania families are healthier. These are working families in Pennsylvania simply can't afford insurance. And as governor, one of the first things I would do is to accept those Medicaid dollars and put them to work in a way that we can do in Pennsylvania to make sure those people have coverage and that we do it in a cost-efficient way.
You're based in eastern Pennsylvania. Some folks here in western Pennsylvania might be wondering what your ideas are that will help people in this part of the state. What do you feel you need to do to get western Pennsylvanians behind you?
Well, first let me say I've been coming to Pittsburgh for 25 years, and it is exciting to see where Pittsburgh is in these 25 years. I worked when I was a state senator with Mayor Murphy, Tom Murphy, in some of his plans to reinvent Pittsburgh, the stadiums and the riverfront development and redevelopment of sort of downtown, all really important to seeing what Pittsburgh looks like today. And I just say Pittsburgh's a real example to cities and towns across Pennsylvania that said, how do we participate in the economic growth, the 21st century economy? How do we in some ways reinvent ourselves? And here that meant really working with the universities and really working with the corporate leadership. And it took political leadership to make this happen, to really talk about the high-tech corridors, the opportunities for new companies, the life sciences. I worked with Governor Ridge to develop the greenhouse. The biotech greenhouses, the one in Pittsburgh that's done good work in helping startup companies and promoting Pittsburgh. So it's, I feel like I know Pittsburgh, and I've been really just thrilled with the support I have here. Every time I come, which is pretty frequently recently, I see more people stepping up and saying they're excited about the kind of leadership and the kind of experience that I can bring and how I can, as a woman, bring a really different attitude about what politics and government ought to be doing in Harrisburg. So I'm here a lot. I have great support here, and we're going to keep building it.
And one of the issues that a lot of people are wondering about is job creation. I know that you have a plan that you are unveiling which speaks to that. What would you do as governor to create jobs in Pennsylvania?
Well, economic growth is a huge issue for Pennsylvania. Tom Corbett has led Pennsylvania to the bottom 10 ranking in this nation in terms of economic growth. That's unacceptable for Pennsylvania. We should have a state with its greater assets in terms of energy, in terms of health care, in terms of a skilled workforce and hardworking Pennsylvanians, where we've always been known as really unacceptable. And as governor, it is the major issue facing us. Now, I do believe the private sector creates jobs. What the government can do is to make sure that we have the create the environment for job creation. And so we need to be able to be competitive. What that means is investing in education. It's making sure that that skilled workforce is truly a skilled workforce for the jobs of the future. And so what I'm proposing today is, as governor, to build on very successful apprenticeship programs where you actually provide incentives to private companies to bring on apprenticeship programs, add 10,000 new apprentices who come into private sector to be able to be hired, trained, and retained as workers so they have the right skills for those jobs and they can stay in those jobs. And that's what we can do in Pennsylvania with just a few tax credits, and we should.
Let's turn to the environment. A train derailment in Vandergrift became the second in as many months in Pennsylvania. Only this time, thousands of gallons of oil leaked from the overturned cars. In the same week, a natural gas well caught fire and exploded in Greene County, killing a worker there. What concerns do you have about the transporting of hazardous materials in Pennsylvania, and what do you see as the best way forward?
Yeah. Well, this is going to take real cooperation between the industry and government to make sure we have the right kinds of regulations and oversight to protect our communities and protect our people as well as protect the workers. I believe strongly on that. When I was first a member of Congress, one of the first things that happened actually after I was elected, but before I was sworn in, we had a really terrible oil spill on the Delaware River, the Athos three spill, and really you're talking about hundreds of gallons, hundreds of thousands of gallons of oil in the Delaware. And what I did is to actually make sure that we had the company meet their responsibility, which was to pay for cleaning it up, remediation environmentally on the riverfront. But I went further, and I worked with the chair of the appropriate committee at the time, which was actually on, which was to actually make sure that we required tankers on our navigable rivers, not just in Pennsylvania but across this country, to be double hull so that you could not have that kind of spill in the future. So I wanted to clean it up. I wanted to remediate, but I also wanted to protect us for the future. And that's what I would do as governor. When we look at transport of both oil and natural gas, we do have to make sure that we have the right regulations and the right oversight to protect our communities as we transport this really vital fuel.
What would your administration do to encourage the construction and renovation of energy-efficient buildings, as well as the creation of smart growth communities and green jobs in Pennsylvania? You mentioned your ideas for growing jobs. What about the green jobs? What about the things that can be done to promote renewable energy as an alternative in Pennsylvania, which a lot of people would like to see?
A great question. So one of the things that I feel very strongly about is the natural gas, as important it is as a cheaper, somewhat cleaner fossil fuel, as a transition fuel, it cannot divert us from attention to really making serious investments in, I would use some of the severance tax to make sure that we make investments in what are really clean, renewable sources of energy. And you're talking about solar and wind and hydro. And we should be doing that. And we've been leaders, wind in particular, but there have been some real challenges. And we need to be able to make those investments, continue to be leaders. And I would actually also make an investment in energy efficiency. I've led the way on commercial buildings, on making sure that they are more energy efficient. And we can, as we redevelop our communities and our towns, do so in a sustainable way. This also means access to public transit. It means stormwater management that can be done through green infrastructure. It means building standards that require green building. All of this is really being done so many places in this country. Again, I've done some of this work in my own district in southeastern Pennsylvania, and it feels transformative for those communities as well. They're proud of their communities. It attracts new business. It attracts families. And we should do it across Pennsylvania.
Congresswoman Allison Schwartz, Democratic candidate for governor of Pennsylvania. We've covered a lot of ground. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
All right. We need new leadership in Pennsylvania. Let's make it happen, Pittsburgh.
Thanks for listening to this special edition of Essential Pittsburgh.
Listen to 90.5 WESA tomorrow for primary election coverage by the WESA News Team. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.